As we continue, Claude Johnson is our guest. He is the founder and president of Black Fives Incorporated. They produce the Black Fives blog, which researches and preserves and teaches the history of African-American participation in basketball. And it is a fascinating place to spend some time. Blackfives.com, common spelling. And you know, with the CIAA tournament going on in Charlotte, everybody is sort of lost amongst the partying that accompanies the event. But you look at that tournament in particular and that conference, it could be safely said that there's been no other conference that has had as big an impact on the game of basketball for African Americans than that conference. But you look at the HBCU impact on the game, where do you think the game would have been? How would it have evolved had it not been for basketball being played at what are now known as HBCUs?
Well, the HBCUs have a big impact on the history of black basketball, and there's the teams from the CIAA, but also somewhat before that were the teams that were independent, because if you go back far enough, you realize that the HBCUs and the college basketball teams were independent back then. There was no conference prior to the CIAA, which I believe was the earliest one. I think they were formed in 1912. And if you go back earlier than that, Howard and Lincoln and Hampton and Wilberforce and some of the other schools had no affiliation. So they were actually able to play against club teams from Harlem and Washington and other places, Pittsburgh, with no real oversight or guidelines the way that they do now. Of course, that could never be done today. But back then, if we take it a step back further, in Washington, D.C., there's a man named Edwin Henderson, who is known somewhat as the grandfather of black basketball. He's the person who first introduced basketball to black folks on a wide-scale basis back in 1904 in the segregated public schools of Washington, D.C. They emerged, and more talent came out of that pool, and eventually they created a team called the 12th Streeters of Washington, which played affiliated with what they called the 12th Street Colored YMCA on 12th and U in Washington, D.C. And that whole team was made up of Howard University students, black students from Howard. After a couple of years of winning national championships in what they call the Colored Basketball World Championship, which was an unofficial title that was given by the black press, they petitioned Howard University to see if Howard would let them become the first varsity basketball team at Howard. And so the president of Howard said yes, and the entire 12th Street team then became Howard's first varsity team and flew under the blue and white colors. And what they did then is proceed again to win the Black National Championship. So in our company, we created some jerseys that were Howard's 1910 retro jerseys, and you know, we donated some of them to Howard University, and I think they're hanging in their library or somewhere in their archives. But you have to go back quite a bit to realize that Howard was one of the key players in that time, and so was Lincoln University and Hampton, and those three really were the powerhouses to begin. I'm talking about in the 1910s. And then after that, you had another wave of colleges like Morehouse and Tuskegee, Wilberforce, and a couple of others that started to emerge. And then later on, Morgan State, and then of course all the ones that we know that became big time. This is way before Winston-Salem, way before, you know, some of the teams that we know of today. But their contribution was that they brought legitimacy to the game, because these were well-known colleges, and they also had a broad social network. So when Howard came to Harlem to play the St. Christopher Club, which was a black team that was affiliated with the St. Philip's Church, which was probably the most prestigious black church in the country at the time, or one of them, then people came out. from everywhere, because it was the black and red of St. Christopher against the blue and white of Howard. And again, this whole cultural phenomena, the whole social phenomena that made it special was because it was meaningful, not just in basketball, but also as a way of really, it was considered racial progress at the time, because people were getting to know one another, share stories, inspire each other. And this is really what not just black folks, but everyone needs today anyway. So I think the contribution paved the way for the further progress, which then eventually paved the way for the emergence of the Harlem Wrens, who won the real world professional basketball championship playing against the 10 best white teams in the country in 1939. And once that happened, then the professional leagues who were previously segregated started to say, wow, you know, maybe there's something here we should be looking at that we're missing. And within a few years, those leagues were racially integrated. So yes, each of these steps was part of the pioneering effort along the continuum of the progress of basketball and of African Americans as a whole.
Claude Johnson, our guest, founder and president of Black Fives Incorporated. Check out the Black Fives blog for all the history, just about all the news that's fit to talk about from a historical context about basketball. The blog itself, pardon me, posts just about every week, so check it out. We're coming up against it, but I have to ask you, as one who played baseball and has covered the Negro League story extensively, I know that there was a great passion in the African-American community for baseball as a national pastime. How was basketball viewed in the context of the national pastime for African-Americans starting in the 40s?
You know, basketball was always a more accessible game, and black teams played against white teams in basketball routinely well before 1910. So this was nothing new, and it was nothing new for even the teams to play one another in let's say secret games, but out in the public for all to see. And so these were some of the most popular games that there were, and the Wrens took advantage of that because they toured all around the country barnstorming and going to small little towns that were little enclaves in different places where they would play the local white team, and they were very good at it, and they became popular that way. But baseball really was the national pastime, and the way that you could maybe get a glimpse into this is that people don't realize Jackie Robinson was actually a much better basketball player than a baseball player. He played for UCLA, of course, but after he got out of UCLA and after his minor league debut, he played on a professional basketball team in Los Angeles called the Los Angeles Red Devils. It was a mixed race team, but the Wrens actually flew out to play them, and they beat a lot of very good teams, including George Mikan's team. But what Jackie decided, he could have easily played professional basketball, and if he had stuck with it and insisted, he probably would have helped integrate the NBA faster than 1950. But instead, he knew, because he saw the big picture, that he could make a bigger impact socially, in society, culturally, in America, by breaking the color barrier in baseball. I mean, basketball, in effect, the color barrier had already been broken in the National Basketball League as early as 1942. So this wouldn't have been anything new, and even if he had joined the National Basketball League at the time, it wouldn't have had the same impact, because basketball just was simply not as big of a sport. It was being played in colleges, they had just started the NIT and tournaments like that, but it still wasn't as big of a deal as baseball. Baseball was just entrenched in the roots of America. And so by Jackie deciding to go into baseball, it was really profound. It didn't leave basketball behind, but definitely the attention went from basketball and from the Wrens into baseball. And so a few years later, the Wrens folded, but it wasn't so much because of Jackie's decision. It was more because the league began to integrate, and there was really no need anymore for an all-black team. The one team that survived that was the Globetrotters, but Abe Saperstein, even he had to change his approach into a more comedic, fun, entertaining type of offering, as opposed to the pure, you know, let's say competitive way that the Globetrotters used to be before they became the clown princes of basketball. So, yes, I think that baseball definitely grabbed and got the attention of African Americans. But when that became, you know, sort of routine, now in the 60s, the attention and the imagination went back to basketball again.
Claude Johnson, the founder and president of Black Fives Incorporated, thank you so much for the knowledge, and we look forward to talking again real soon.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.